Netcasts you love.
From people you trust.
This is Twit. Bandwidth for the Tech Guy is provided by CacheFly. CacheFly.com. Hi, this is Leo Laporte, and this is my Tech Guy podcast. This show originally aired on the Premier Radio Networks on the first day of Hanukkah, December 8th, 2012. This is episode 933. Enjoy. The Tech Guy podcast is brought to you by RingCentral. I love my cloud-based phone system from RingCentral. Zero startup costs, and RingCentral is $20 per month per user. Try it now with a 30-day risk-free trial. When you buy one desk phone, you'll get a second phone free, up to 20 phones. Call 800-543-9980 or visit ringcentral.com and use the promo code TWIT. And by ShareFi. Enhance your workflow. Send files of almost any size easily and securely with ShareFile from Citrix. Try ShareFile today. For a 30-day free trial, go to ShareFile.com, click the radio microphone, and enter TechGuy. Well, hey, how are you today? Leo Laporte here, the Tech Guy, and it's time to talk about technology. Well, you know, that stuff that you keep in your pocket or you have on your desk, your living room, your TV, your video game machine, your camera, digital camera, right? Yeah. All that jazz. Phone number is 8888-ASK-LEO. If you have a question, comment, a suggestion, 888-827-5536. That's toll-free from anywhere in the U.S. If you're outside the U.S., fear not. You could just call us, use something like Skype. And Skype ad will be free to a toll-free number. So we get a lot of listeners outside the U.S., which is nice, from all over the world. 8888-ASK-LEO. This is also episode 933. So that means you might want to go to the website techguylabs.com and catch up if you haven't been listening since 2004. They're all on there. Just go and you can listen. It'll only take you about, 2 hours, 1,866 hours. That shouldn't be too bad. If you listen nonstop, just take you a few weeks. Get through all those old shows so you'd be all caught up. You wouldn't want to miss anything. Of course, going forward, all you have to do is just listen to the show every day, and then you're set. 8888-ASK-LEO, techguylabs.com. Oh, we have a chat room. I knew there was something else. These are great people who are always watching. Middle of the night, I can come in here, and they're still there, watching, waiting, hoping something interesting will happen. If you want to, it's more fun during the show, I got to say. If you want to be part of it, just to visit irc.twit.tv. No chat client needed because it's a web-based chat, but if you have a IRC client, you can use that as well. irc.twit.tv. Well, you know that Google has been trying very hard to get in the social media business. Did you know that? You wouldn't think. What do you think? It would be fun to do a poll. What do you think Google's business is? What do you think they do for a living over there at the Googleplex? They have a lot of stuff. You know, they own YouTube. There's probably a decent living there somewhere. They have the Google Docs. And then they have this thing you probably all know, and maybe many of you use, Google Search. Yeah, and none of those are their business. Their business is selling ads, period. That's their business. That's how they make their money, selling ads. And the business has been pretty good, but maybe it could be better, because I noticed that Google has decided to charge for one of its... You know, historically, Google services have been free. There's been one... you pay if you want more than the storage that Google Mail gives you, which is about, what is it? I don't know, 8, 10 gigabytes free. You want more than that, you could pay for it. It's not very expensive. And you can use that to store your pictures on Picasa and upload your music and Google Music, stuff like that. But they have a lot of services if you go through it. They do a lot of stuff. But really, it's all about... Search was the start, but then they've added a lot of features. So you can't really say they're just a search engine anymore, can you? I mean, it really is more than that. But really, what they do is they get you to use the internet, and the more you use the internet, they say, they even say this out loud, the more you use the internet, the more they make, because what they really make money on is selling ads. So if you do a Google search, you'll see paid ad results, not in the search results, but around the search, you know, above or side to the side of the search results. And it always says, I mean, they're at least, you know, they're careful about saying it's an advertisement. But people pay good money, you know, for search terms. So if you're a chiropractor in Encino, what you could do is you go to Google, and Google Smart. They don't just say, oh, yeah, that'll be $5. They say, well, let's see how many chiropractors in Encino there are and how much they'll bid. They have an auction. And they charge what you know what the market will bear. And, of course, if you are a chiropractor in Encino, you want to buy the search terms chiropractic, chiropractor, ow, my bones hurt, that kind of thing. And then when anybody does a search with the term, say, chiropractor, and they're in your area, they'll see your ad. It's kind of a clever concept. But in order for all of this to work, Google's got to get you not only to use their search, but use all their tools. The more they can know about you, the better they can target those ads at you. If you recently bought a boat, they might want to sell you a life preserver, that kind of thing. But surprisingly, this week, Google decided to start charging more for its Google Docs. The only thing they've historically charged for, as I said, was storage and this Google Docs thing that they do, and only for business. And because it's actually a great business product. You know, Microsoft charges for Microsoft Office and SkyDrive and SharePoint. And that's kind of what this is. It's a way of sharing documents, presentations, word processors, pictures, that kind of thing. And it's free for us end users. You know, just docs.google.com. You can use it all you want. But if you want to use it as Google Apps in business, it costs you a little bit. And now they're actually increasing the number of people who will have to pay for Google Docs. So that's interesting. That's a little bit of change. It's the first time Google's really said, hey, we want to make money on this thing. They don't charge. That's the only two things I think they charge for, if I'm not mistaken. But they really realized that search itself was kind of dying out. And they were looking over at Twitter and Facebook, and they said, look at all the traffic they have, and look at all the, not just traffic, but all the signals they get from people using it about what's interesting. And this we could use to improve our advertising. Boy, we'd really like to do something social. So last year, Larry Page, the CEO of Google, it's a long story and I apologize, almost done. Last year, the CEO of Google, Larry Page, said, your bonuses this year are going to depend on how well we do in social. Social, like Facebook or like Twitter or like Instagram. In fact, they created a thing called Google Plus. And if you go to Google now, it's everywhere. Google Plus is, you know, if you go to Google.com and do a Google search, you get this black bar at the top now, which shows all the Google things. And the one on the left is the Plus. That's your Google social network. Well, this week they added something new. And I have to say, I like Google Plus, but I noticed that fewer and fewer people were using it, even though they have Hangouts, the video chats, they have events, they have the invites. They keep adding nice features. But this week they added something really important, communities. And all of a sudden, I think this might be this. I'd be interested to see if this is the turning point, because the Google Plus hasn't really been very compelling. Not, you know, people are stuck on Facebook and stuff, but this communities thing, if you have an area of interest, you join a community, you join a discussion. And I just think we've started one for the tech guy. It's called Team Tech Guy. If you're on Google Plus, it's open to the public. All you have to do is just go to Team Tech Guy, and you can make comments there. In fact, what we're going to probably do is start. I've created some discussion groups, some areas of discussion. One's called Help Me. Since people often come to the show looking for computer help, we could talk about this week's show. I've got one for the home theater geeks, Scott Wilkinson segment. That's coming up in a few minutes. Digital photography. That's Chris Marquardt every week. He's probably not on this week. Gizwiz, our gadgets of the week, all of that. So let's see how this works. You know, I have a website. And of course, as you know, my recommendation is you always keep a website, because you own that. Google owns this. But I think there's some certain value to this that's perhaps interesting. So I asked, by the way, on the Team Tech Guy community at Google Plus, what should I talk about at the beginning of the show? And Adam Coleridge said Google Plus and community. So I am. Mark Cobb actually had an interesting thing. He said, how about a T-Mobile's new pricing structure? Yeah, I think that's, we'll talk about that. T-Mobile is no longer going to subsidize phone costs, and that by doing so, they're going to give you the best deal in cell phone service. The question is, will people get it? Will they understand that they're getting a deal if they have to pay $400 or $500 for the phone up front? I think that's going to be an interesting topic. Yeah, we'll talk about that. Good suggestion, Mark. Or anything on your mind. My phone number is 8888-ASK-LEO, as I mentioned, and I'd love to talk to you. Give me a ring. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. 8888-ASK-LEO. Okay, so I did mention that the chat room is a very useful, handy tool for me. I follow, you know, the chat room follows the show closely and then gives me suggestions for what, you know, I should answer. And, you know, I can always ask them if I don't know something. But unfortunately, they also can be a problem, a distraction. Somebody in the chat room sent me this. It's a kitty cat singing the theme from the Game of Thrones TV show. I don't know. I'm kind of sorry I saw this. YouTube, it's just a wonderful intellectual exercise, isn't it? Actually, you know, it's interesting. We were talking about Google. Google really wants to turn YouTube into a television, a more respectable television-style network. You know, instead of just a bunch of cat videos and other short stuff. They really see the future as, you know, putting real content on there. So they have been spending a lot of money. Last year they spent between $100 and $150 million to get producers to produce high quality content for YouTube. And I think they said that they're going to do the second round of that now and spent $200 million. And the way it works is they go to somebody like Shaquille O'Neal, who has a channel on YouTube. I've never seen it, but other famous people and the comedians, that kind of thing. They say, all right, we're going to give you, you know, anywhere between $1 and $5 million to fund this and just put good stuff up on YouTube. You only have to do, I can't remember what it is, 40, 50, 100 videos a year, something like that. It's not a huge number. And we'll sell ads on it. And we'll after we make our money back, we'll share our revenue with you. So far, I don't think there's any breakout hits. But Google's in this for the long haul. They really want to make this this work, and they just as they really are committed to social with this Google Plus thing. 8888-ASK-LEO, that's the phone number. Let's go to the phones. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Mike is in South Pasadena. Hi, Mike.
Oh, hi, Leo. How are you doing?
I'm well, welcome.
That's good. Well, I hope you have a nice, happy holiday.
Thank you.
And let's see, I'd like to answer. I wonder how you can get any kind of thing, like if you got iHeartRadio or something like that, like for a blind person.
Ah, interesting. So you're using are you using a cell phone now, or what are you using?
Oh no, I don't have anything with any new technology. I'm just dialing from regular landline, but I was just wondering how you can get something like that.
Well, iHeartRadio is the radio application for Clear Channel radio stations. They have both the radio stations and they have music stations, like Pandora-style music stations. But you have to have a computer or a phone or an internet-connected radio to play it.
I see. It has to be on the internet.
It's via the internet, yeah.
Oh, yeah. So that would be interesting, something for a blind person. Like you could have something that it can talk to you or something, tell you.
Yeah, so people, we have many blind listeners who use computers with screen readers, and that's exactly what they do. I've also seen some very interesting other kinds of things, like Braille keyboards. I don't know if you've ever seen these. Do you read Braille?
I read Braille, yeah.
Yeah, these are really kind of amazing. These are, it looks like a strip, about 12 inches long and just about half an inch tall. It's in a little box. You connect it to the computer, and some software is running the computer, and the computer will pop up little dots on this strip that's Braille that you can read. So you can actually read the screen using your fingers.
Oh, yeah, because I know the grade one and then grade two Braille stuff I took when I was in school.
Yeah, exactly. So that's pretty amazing. That's pretty amazing. And then there are screen readers. There's free ones and there's paid ones. JAWS is the best-known paid one. It's a little expensive. And then on many smartphones, iPhones particularly, they have this built-in, this voice assist built-in. So if you, for instance, had a cell phone, an iPhone mic, you could download iHeartRadio onto it, and then you could speak to it, and it would speak to you. And you could say, do this, do that, and it would say, okay, you're on iHeartRadio. You might do some tapping as well. So yeah, there are certainly ways to do that.
And I heard you can listen to radio stations that are all over the United States.
Yeah, that's what's great about iHeartRadio.
Like I can listen to if you ever heard of WIBC in Indianapolis, Indiana.
Exactly. Now, not iHeartRadio doesn't have. Unfortunately, all the different radio groups have their own application. There used to be. There's one I love called TuneIn Radio. That is a third-party app that has many internet radio stations, maybe 30 or 40,000 internet radio stations on it. But CBS, which is another big radio group, pulled their stations off of there. They said, no, you can't use ours, and created their own CBS application. Many of the iHeartRadio stations are also on TuneIn, but not all. And iHeartRadio has its own features. So, but the nice thing about having a computer or a smartphone or whatever is you can have all these apps. So what I would suggest is, and they're all free, is you get iHeartRadio, CBS Radio, and TuneIn Radio. There's a paid version of TuneIn Radio Pro, which is only a few bucks. And then you really can pretty much listen to any radio station, not just in the U.S., but in the world. As long as they have an internet presence, you can do that. WIBC in particular is both on TuneIn and iHeartRadio. So Mike, yeah, this is great. Now, I would suggest if you've not got any technology, you don't have the internet, a cell phone's probably a good way to go, but they're not cheap. You probably have somewhere like the Lighthouse for the Blind or the Independent Living Resource Center in your area that you should probably go to first and talk to them and ask them what the options are. They're experts in this. This is all called assistive technology. And really, it's one of the great uses of computers and technology is to open the world up to people with varying disabilities. And certainly blind users are getting an awful lot, I think, out of smartphones. We have a blind listener in Hawaii who says that the iPhone is the best for this. She's just very happy with the assistive technologies built into the iPhone. The problem is it's not cheap. Actually, that's one of the things that's kind of interesting about this thing that T-Mobile is doing. I don't know if you saw this. They've decided, first of all, they're going to get the iPhone, but not till next year. So that will make all four major U.S. carriers will have the iPhone. But T-Mobile's decided not to subsidize phones. So you know now when you buy a phone from AT&T, Sprint, Verizon, and still with T-Mobile until they change over, the phone might cost anything from free to a couple hundred bucks. In some cases, the really fancy phones, $300. But those are subsidized prices. My Galaxy Note 2, my current favorite phone, I paid for an unsubsidized price for it, and it was $700. But you can get it from AT&T and Verizon for $200. Well, where's the extra $500 go? Well, they make it up over the 2 years of the contract. They're going to make a lot of money, as much as $100 a month. That's $2,400. So they don't mind, subsidizing the phone. And that's why they have those early termination fees. That's why you're under contract to them. If you decide after getting a subsidized phone from Verizon that you don't want to go with them anymore, they'll charge you, and sometimes they'll charge you quite a bit. You got 2 years before you get out of that early termination fee. You're under contract to them. So T-Mobile, which is the also-ran, the smallest of the big four, have decided to eliminate contracts. They're going to have lower plans, and they're going to stop subsidizing phones. I think that's very interesting. We'll see how people take to that. Scott Wilkinson is here, home theater guru. Scott does the Home Theater Geeks podcast on the Twit Network every Monday at 2 p.m. Pacific, 5 p.m. Eastern Time, twit.tv. But he also joins us every week to talk about home theater. Now, we teased everybody last week.
We did.
We said we were going to talk about The Hobbit, because The Hobbit opens this Friday.
Yep.
And somebody was quoting in the chat room a review from Salon Magazine, which was not kindly. But I don't want to spoil it for anybody, and I don't care if it's tedious. They said it was tedious. I don't care if it's tedious. I want to see it.
Me too.
And I want to see it the way Peter Jackson, its director, and J.R.R. Tolkien, its author, intended.
And we all know that J.R.R. Tolkien intended it to be shown at high frame rate.
Huge fan of 3D IMAX. We know that. So there are, you could see, now, so there are a variety of ways you could see The Hobbit when it opens on Friday. You could see it.
They're releasing it in 6 different formats.
Holy cow. So I presume there is a stand, I mean, it's shot in digital. He shot it with super high quality red cameras, in digital.
In 3D.
So there's no, so one version we can eliminate is film, right?
Well, they will probably actually take the final digital master and load it off to film for those few theaters that only have film projectors.
There's still
theaters probably
that can't,
do that.
Yeah, there's still theaters that can't do it. So okay. Film would be one.
Right.
2D digital would be another one.
Yep.
Just kind of plain old 2D. And I imagine, by the way, we're not even talking audio formats. There'll be Dolby Digital, DTS. There'll be all the other, you know.
Right. And there'll also be one called Dolby Atmos, which
is
a new audio format that puts speakers not only all around you, but overhead as well.
Oh, well, see, now I want to add Atmos to this. Overhead?
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Okay.
So that individual objects, when the sound mixer deals with the individual objects that are flying around, say a bird or an insect or something, they can actually use a joystick and move it around the room, and the Dolby Atmos system converts that into, well, which speakers should it be coming from?
All right.
In order to make that effect. So that is one option that is not going to be very common. There aren't very many theaters equipped with Dolby Atmos sound systems.
Now, you told me that Atmos is incompatible or doesn't show up on... IMAX doesn't have Atmos, right?
IMAX does not, because they have their own sound system.
So you have to choose either Atmos or IMAX.
That's one of many choices to make here.
Does IMAX have sound over your head?
No.
Well, the heck with that.
However, IMAX, in my opinion, is the best 3D.
Right.
Because they use 2 projectors, which means the 3D image is brighter. There's more light that reaches your eyes because they use 2 projectors.
Okay.
So then we haven't even talked about 2D versus 3D.
Right.
Right. They're shot in 3D.
Yeah. So there will be 2D versions out there.
There will. Yeah, absolutely.
How do they turn 3D into 2D?
They just show one of them. They just show one eye.
The left eye.
Yeah, exactly.
That's the same way you turn stereo into mono. You just show one speaker.
Yeah, exactly.
Wow.
But the big news with The Hobbit, of course, is what's called high frame rate, or HFR.
And this is the first commercial release of an HFR movie.
The first big studio release of HFR, correct.
So normal film, when you had sprockets and actual frames of film.
Celluloid film going through a
camera. Was 24 frames a second. That was as slow as they could go, and it would still look fluid. You wouldn't see any stuttering. Any lower than that, it looks a little stuttery. The reason they wanted the lowest possible is because the equipment of the age, and when we're talking the 20s, couldn't handle, you know, was unreliable at faster speeds.
Well, plus, film stock was expensive.
And you don't want to waste film stock, yeah.
That's right. They wanted it to go as slow as possible so they could buy as little as they needed to do the movie. If they went any faster, they'd have to buy more film stock.
So when you, now the irony is that we no longer have any of those constraints because it's digital. It can be any frame rate you want.
Just
but people are used to the look and feel of 24 frames a second.
Correct.
Now, this high frame rate is interesting. It's 2X. It's twice 24 or 48.
48 frames per second. That's right. Peter Jackson and James Cameron are both strong advocates of using higher frame rate because, as you say, we're no longer constrained by the technology. We don't have to do 24 frames per second. And yet, that's the way it's been done for 100 years.
Now, you mentioned a website where you can find theaters that are capable of 48 frames per second.
Right. It's called 48fpsmovies.com.
48fpsmovies.com.
Right.
Now, that doesn't mean the movie you're seeing will be 48 frames, but it means that the cinema that you're going to see it at is capable, and then you would want to find out.
Correct. Now, the 48fpsmovies.com does have a list of movies that are 48fps compatible or capable and are going to be showing The Hobbit in that high frame rate.
Now, I would say, you know, I mean, I'm a geek. I'm going to want to see it in IMAX 3D 48 frames. That would be like the Mac. All the needles go to 11.
Right.
And in fact, yeah, I have purchased 20 tickets for the theater in San Francisco that has it that way.
The Metreon, right?
Well, no, it's not the Metreon. It's but it's another AMC theater up the street from the Metreon.
Okay. All right. Wow, so you're taking the whole crew over, huh?
Well, 20, yeah.
Yeah, 20 of the crew.
Yeah, and it's not opening night, so a lot of them will have already gone to see it. But I just thought, you know, so I got 20 tickets. So we're going to go see it a week from Friday.
Fantastic.
And I'm hoping now, but after I did that, I've been reading all sorts of things about 48 frames per second. And one of the things people say is you won't like it.
Some people are saying that. I have already read some reviews of people who've seen preview screenings. There's an article out of the UK that's saying people are getting sick. They're getting migraines. They're getting nauseous. Now, the question is...
People
is
are nuts. Because... That's not going to make you sick. Peter Jackson's response was absolutely not. In fact, it's quite the opposite. Because we were looking at 3D footage for hours every day as we shot The Hobbit. And because we were watching in 48 frames, we didn't have any of the issues that we would have had at 24-frame 3D.
Correct. That is the other argument. I will be very interested to hear your take on it and those who you're taking along, because this is a really interesting question. Now, I suspect those people who felt sick, I don't know. The other argument is against 48 frames is given by film purists who say it looks too much like video. This is the same argument.
It's too accurate.
It's too accurate. It's too sharp. You know, I've heard a number of people say that HDTV looks too sharp, too real.
Oh, stop and I it. Bet Go you- away. Go watch your I Love Lucy reruns and leave the rest of us in peace.
Exactly. 48 frames is going to look really, really sharp, especially notice how things in motion look.
Right.
Right? So things that are moving across the screen or when the camera is panning, things are going to look a lot sharper than you're used to. And maybe you're not used to looking at 24 frames and noticing that the things in motion are very blurry. Unfortunately, I am. Sometimes when you point something out, then you can't not see it anymore.
By the way, this theater is charging almost $17 a ticket for this IMAX.
Which, to tell you the truth, is kind of normal these days.
It's ridiculous. That's worth it. So now I was talking to my friend Alex Lindsay, who is who worked at Lucas. He's an expert in this stuff.
Oh,
and
yeah.
He said there part of the reason people are unhappy with The Hobbit is this 48 frame per second technology is new, and the way they did it is probably not ideal. Something to do with keyframes. I don't really quite understand it.
That's a very good question.
From the Slate Review, seen at 48 frames per second, Gandalf's staff looked like a cast resin prop. Too real. Stay tuned. More to come.
And in the darkness find them. Do not take me for some conjurer of cheap tricks. I'm not a conjurer of cheap tricks.
Leo LaPorte.
Keep it secret, keep it safe. I got a long gray beard. Keep it secret, keep it safe.
The tech guy. Beard. We're talking about The Hobbit. And the controversy around The Hobbit, you could see it in standard 2 definition, 24 frames in some theaters, and some even with film. But most of us tech geeks are going to want to see it, as Peter Jackson, the director, intended it, in 48 frames per second, twice the frame rate, giant, ginormous IMAX screen 3D.
Yep.
Let me tell you, I mentioned the review from Slate Magazine, Dana Stevens writing in Slate Magazine, The Hobbit looks like Teletubbies and it's way too long. She called it Bored of the Rings. And she particularly singled out 48 frames per second. Last sentence of the review, it's hard to overstate the degree to which 48 frames per second interfered with my ability to get lost in this movie's story. I should probably see it again in a regular format to give it another chance, but that would involve sitting through that whole dwarf ballad again. Apparently there's a 20-minute history of the dwarves that begins this thing.
Oh, man.
She said it looks like an 80s-era home video shot by someone who happened to be standing around on the set while The Hobbit was being filmed. Washed out, flat, soap opera. It's all the things that people complain about with 128 frames per second on their LCD TVs.
That's right.
People are used to 24 frames per second. It gives it.
This is part of the problem.
It softens it because it isn't a high frame rate.
That's right. It does soften the picture when it comes to motion. Now, things that are totally still look perfectly fine or sharp. But, you know, if you put things in motion, they're going to start to look blurry.
Well, now I'm worried. But anyway, I am still going to see it.
I wouldn't worry. I would absolutely go see it in 48. Yeah. No question about it.
We'll have a focus group of 20.
This is a historic moment in the history of filmmaking.
It's not just Peter Jackson. As you mentioned, it's James Cameron, the director of Avatar. Yep. He actually has a company that is supposedly helping other filmmakers shoot 3D. He wants it to be 8K I mean, he wants it to be very, very high resolution.
Right, or 4K at least.
I think they're going for 8K.
Are they? Okay.
I'm not sure. And 48 frames. Because 4K is the Hollywood standard now.
Right. And there aren't very many cameras that can actually capture at 8K.
Right.
There are some, but they're super expensive still. Right.
But, you know, Peter Jackson bought a bunch of 4K cameras, the Reds.
The Reds are actually 5K, but roughly the same. And they're, you know, certainly very affordable when you're talking about professional film, high-level film, well, movie cameras, cinema cameras. They're quite reasonable from Red. And he bought a bunch of them, and he put two of them. I'm sure he must have used Cameron Pace equipment, possibly 3Ality. To mount two of those cameras together.
That's exactly what they did.
Rig.
They had two 4K or 5K cameras side by side.
Right. And they shot everything in native 3D, which is a good thing because converting 2D to 3D is another common practice in Hollywood, and it often doesn't work very well. Whereas shooting originally in 3D, I think, gives you a better 3D experience overall. And going to IMAX is probably the best way to see it. As we said, two projectors, brighter image, more light coming at you, gives you a better 3D experience. So look for IMAX 48 frames per second. You won't find Dolby Atmos at an IMAX theater, so you have to kind of make a choice there. There might be some theaters that have 48 frames at 3D. All these numbers and letters, you know, it's alphabet soup. There will probably be some that have Dolby Atmos, but very few, I think. I think you're going to the right theater. I'm going to the same kind of theater, IMAX, 48 frames, 3D, to see The Hobbit next week. I haven't got my tickets yet, but I will certainly get them very soon.
Well, we shall see.
it's an important moment in the history of movies, and I certainly want to check it out for myself, and I encourage other people to as well.
And while I don't fully understand what my video expert friend was saying when he said that the way they converted it to 48 was not ideal, I will withhold judgment because it may not be the best way to see 48 frames. We'll probably see more. I hate 3D.
Yeah, so. I know, and yet you're going to 3D.
Oh, well, you know.
I mean, it's the thing. James Cameron is doing Avatar 2 at high frame rate. We don't know whether it's going to be 48 or 60. It might even be 60 frames per second.
60 is television. Oh, no, television's 30.
Yeah, yeah. Well, essentially, it's television. Yes. Television, broadcast television is 30 frames per second delivered in two half frames. And those fields come at you 60 times per second. So when you combine them together, it's 30 frames per second, but Blu-ray can certainly deliver 60 frames per second. And yet when you're looking at a Blu-ray of a movie and you're looking at it at 60 frames per second, you're not really going to see any distinct difference because the movie itself is stored on the disc at 24 frames. There's only 24 frames of information. So the Blu-ray player repeats frames as necessary to bring it up to 60. But you're still going to see the blurriness in motion and stuff like that, which you won't see in this high frame rate. This is big news.
I just love it. In this review, she says that Gandalf's staff looks like something cast out of resin that he bought at a Wiccan supply house. I'm dying. It's either going to be a comedy or it's going to be a great movie. But either way, it'll be fun.
You know, whether or not it's a great movie, I don't know. I have to tell you, I was not a big fan of all the Lord of the Ring movies.
Yeah.
Because all they were fighting, chasing, running, fighting, chasing, running, fighting, chasing, running. That's,
well, that's,
you know,
modern filmmaking. What are you talking
about? Well, yeah, I know, but...
They just didn't have cars. That's why you didn't like it. They needed cars to blow up.
They need cars to blow up.
Scott, that's who's right. Your guest on Home Theater Geeks this weekend?
Ooh, this week, on Monday, is Tom Sumner, a senior VP at Yamaha. And we're going to be talking about Yamaha's 125th anniversary. This year is their 125th wow. anniversary. And so we're going to be talking about the milestones that Yamaha has brought to the consumer electronics world, home theater in particular. Also, a little bit of musical instruments, because I'm a musician as well. And
we
I
should
play.
Mention that when we started the segment at the bottom of the hour, we played a little tuba music. You're on the tuba there, Jingle Bells via the tuba.
That's right.
You're going to be doing a performance tomorrow of A Tuba Christmas.
No. Actually, December 16th, Sunday, December 16th, a week from tomorrow, is Tuba Christmas Los Angeles. Now, anybody in L.A., please come. It's all the information's at tubachristmasla.com, a site I made with Squarespace, by the way.
And if you are not in L.A., there's apparently tuba performances. There's
tuba Christmas all over the country.
For the country.
Go to tubachristmas.com, and you'll see a link that says, where's Tuba Christmas? And you'll go there, and there'll be a drop-down menu. You pick your state. It's in probably all 50 states.
It ain't Christmas without tubas.
It ain't Christmas without tubas, and you haven't lived till you've heard 200 tubas play Jingle Bells.
All right.
Like we did at the top of the hour.
Home Theater Geeks will be at Monday at 2 p.m. Pacific, 5 p.m. Eastern Time. You can watch live on twit.tv or download it after the fact. All the places podcasts are, iTunes and so forth. Just look for Home Theater Geeks. Thank you, Scott. Well, and read Scott's column at hometheaterhi-fi.com. Thank you, Scott.
Thank you so much.
All right.
My pleasure.
We'll talk again next week.
Next week.
Audie in Los Angeles, Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Hi, Audie.
Hi, Leo. 1 second. I'm a truck driver, and I need to get this 80,000 pounds pulled to the side.
Ah, yes. You know, take your time. No hurry, Audie. It's okay.
Okay, I got it over.
Holy cow.
Okay, I've got a Toshiba satellite laptop, and I've got problems with it. It won't create a restore point.
It won't create a restore point. Uh-oh. Hang on, Audie. We're going to take a break. You can hang on for a second. We're going to do news at the top of the hour, and we will be back with more Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Well, a good day to you, Leo Laporte here, the tech guy. Time to talk about computers, the internet, cell phones, camcorders, MP3 players, home theater, and all that jazz. 888-ASK-LEO. 888-827-5536 is the number. The chat room and the website are together at last at techguylabs.com. We've also created a Google Plus community, Team Tech Guy. If you want to hang out there, you're welcome to do so as well. Now, Audie is the tech truck driver in Los Angeles whose Toshiba laptop will not do a system restore point. You know, Audie, that is sometimes a sign of a virus. Are you still there, Audie? Did I lose you?
Extend a virus program.
Okay.
And it doesn't show anything. Now, also, it will not do a Windows update. And I said, well, the heck with it. What I'll do is I'll just format the hard drive and start all over. And I'll start to format the hard drive, and it'll come back, cannot format this hard drive, and reverting to previous version.
Oh, that's interesting. So it sounds like the hard drive itself is at fault, and that's not unusual. There's flaws on the drive. You may be able to recover it. Is it now? Some laptops, it's fairly simple to put a new hard drive in. Do you have? Sometimes there's a little port on the bottom, a couple of screws attach it. You open that up, and either there's memory in there or there's memory and hard drives on some laptops. And I don't know on this Toshiba. You remove the battery. There's the hard drive. If the hard drive's easily replaceable. That's probably the easiest thing to do. Hard drives aren't expensive. You can get more capacity, better speed. If it's not replaceable, then there are recovery programs like SpinRite. My friend GRC, Steve Gibson at GRC.com makes a program. But it's 80 or 90, it's $80, which is the cost of a new hard drive.
So, yeah.
So if it's easier, you know, if you've got everything on the hard drive, you don't need to worry about the data being lost. and it's easy to put a new hard drive in than you know, stop at Fry's and pick up a hard drive.
Okay, well, the computer works fine except for those three things. I can go on the internet. I can surf all the web pages. I can view it. I can listen to Leo LaFort on AM 640.
All right, the great KFI. Well, yeah, I think probably it's what it is normally when all hard drives have bad sectors. It stores data in something called a sector. It's kind of an imaginary division on the hard drive. It stores data in those sectors. And if a sector cannot be read or written to, the hard drive has a bad sector table. It'll just add that to the bad sector table. It'll just stop using it. And there's enough redundancy and extra space on the hard drive that all hard drives have a bad sector table and have some bad sectors, all of them. And as a hard drive, wears, you can add to that. That's what SpinWrite does, by the way. It's a very simple program. It's not a complicated program. It reads every sector on the drive. If it finds a sector it has difficulty reading, it will keep reading it till it can get the data off of it. Then we'll relocate that data and map that sector out. Say it's bad, don't use it. And often that's all you need. Now, there are, unfortunately, on Windows, there's some non-relocatable sectors. Sectors like the master boot record that cannot be moved. And it may, in fact, be that your system... that's why I'm worried about the fact that it couldn't format. Sounds like it can't write to those critical spots. So it may be that it's unsafe, really, in the long run to run Windows without updating it. You know that, right?
Correct, yeah. I think your first suggestion of just going and buying a new hard drive is the best one.
They're cheap.
Or throwing the computer in the trash can.
Well, how old is that laptop?
Oh, it's 4 to 5 years yeah. old.
And you keep it in the cab?
I keep it in the sleeper here.
In the sleeper?
The cab of the truck.
Yeah, so it's being vibrated. It's being vibrated constantly for 4 or 5 years. I'm not surprised the hard drive has some problems. In fact, it's amazing that it lasted that long.
Okay, I think that's what I'll try is just go buy a new hard drive. The Fry's or Best Buy.
Anywhere. Even Costco now sells hard drives. But you want one that's okay. For that laptop. You could even look online, Amazon, or Newegg would probably have it. But make sure you get one that will fit that drive. And you might even look into, if you want to add speed, I don't know if there'd be a benefit on an older, they probably wouldn't. You could look at a solid state drive. The problem is the older laptop doesn't have an I.O. bus fast enough to make any difference. I mean, it'll work. It just won't. You won't notice any speed difference. There was a very interesting YouTube video of a guy shouting at his hard drives. Have you seen this yet? This guy is a IT, and I don't think it's a scam. Actually, you can search for it on YouTube. It's called "Shouting in the Data Center." The guy's an IT or a network operations guy. And he's running some software in his data center that measures errors, drive read errors. He has a big array of disks. I don't know how many disks. It looks like maybe 100 disks in there. And they're showing zero errors as they operate until he goes over and shouts at the drive. Now, he's shouting. In fact, I'll play a little clip of this so you can hear, because he's shouting pretty loudly at the drive.
The lights are blinking on these J-bugs because they're doing work.
So it's kind of noisy in there anyway.
It's not recommended. This is not supported. Do not try this at home. Ah!
He's now shouting at the drive. And look, there's an error. There's an error, a very big spike of errors. Let's see that again. Shout at the drive some more, sir. Okay, you get the idea. He hurt the drive's feelings, says Dr. Mom. What he's really demonstrating is the fact that modern drives are so jam-packed with data, their bits are so tight together, that the vibrations from shouting are sufficient to jiggle the drive just a little bit and cause a read error. Now, you're driving around in a truck. It's amazing that drive lasted 5 years. It's not the noise, it's the vibration, and that That continuous vibration just shows how well made, actually, that laptop was. Those drives, of course, are on cushioned bearings and things like that. Don't recommend shouting at your disk drives. But, you know, maybe I shout at my computer a lot. I know people shout at the radio when I'm on sometimes. Maybe not such a good idea. And if you don't, and if portability is not the most important thing, Audi, you might try an external drive, you know, just use that. Sometimes you can, if on an older computer, even you can boot from an external drive. The thing about solid state drives is most of the speed benefit requires a very fast connection, a fast data bus. And a computer that old will not have a data bus that can accommodate the high speed. On the other hand, the solid state drives are not susceptible to vibration issues. So if you want to watch the video in its entirety, shouting in the data center. And, you know, it could be fake. It could be. You know, there's no reason it's not. But I'm pretty sure it's not. Mike, Maine, Leo, the tech guy. Hi, Mike.
Hey, Leo. How you doing today?
I'm well. How are you?
I'm doing great because I'm on the air with you. Who could ask for more, right?
Aww.
Leo, I got a glitch. My favorite search engine is Google. I just find that it works best for me, and yeah. I prefer to use Firefox, although I do have Chrome and stuff.
Mm-hmm.
And starting 2 days ago, I have found I cannot get search results on Google using Firefox if I have my JavaScript enabled. If I disable it, it works fine.
What? Okay, now are you going to google.com, or are you using the little search? Are you using the URL, the awesome bar, as they call it in Firefox, to do the searches?
Well, I'm not using the awesome bar. I'm using the little search engine bar to the right.
You're using
and
that.
I type in...
Why would you need JavaScript disabled? That sounds like an error. I'll think about it. Hold on. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Come on. I'm talking to you. Mike in Maine has an interesting problem. His Firefox, by the way, Firefox now updates automatically. So the first thing when Firefox starts adding wonky, I assume, is, oh, they pushed an update that broke something. It's JavaScript, I could see maybe JavaScript is required, but to say you can't be using JavaScript is really strange.
And what happens if I disable JavaScript, everything's fine, but when it's enabled, everything's fine in the Google search, but when it's enabled, it does not go through with the secondary search right from the Google homepage. I can get the first search, but then if I type in Scott Wilkinson, that comes up. When I get the results there, if I type in the Google bar, Leo Laporte, I won't get anything. It's blank.
So there's a couple of possibilities. My suspicion is that something that uses JavaScript could even be an exploit, but something that uses JavaScript is getting in the way. So it doesn't work initially because the thing that's using JavaScript that's trying to enter, for instance, if I were malware, one of the things I might want to do is intercept search results and send you to a Viagra page or a poker page. So let's say that's on your system, but it's not well written, as they often aren't, and it's broken. So you type in a Google search, it tries to intercept it, and it dies. When you disable JavaScript, you're disabling the exploit, and Google search works sort of, but I think that secondary search probably needs JavaScript. So do you see that kind of scenario I'm painting here, which is that something that does use JavaScript is getting in the way?
Now, it doesn't happen in Chrome, and it doesn't happen in IE, and I've disabled all my add-ons, and still same thing happens, and I tried Firefox Safe Mode, same thing happens.
Same thing happens.
Only in Firefox.
Does that, let me ask the chat, you don't have any toolbars on there? You've disabled all the toolbars, all the extensions?
Disabled totally everything.
Yeah, there's something wrong, obviously. I don't have to tell you. But there's something wrong, and it worries me a little bit. Have you done the Firefox reset?
No, I have not done
that.
There's a
reset command. That just basically it makes it as if it came from the factory.
So it would take all my add-ons and such out.
Yeah, And it would also delete history, caches, everything. That should work.
Yeah, I delete all those on exit anyway. Keep that pretty clean.
That should work. If that doesn't, then an uninstall, a reinstall might work. The only cause for concern is that there's something getting in here, and it's getting in the way. And
I do have, you know, reasonably name brand internet security on there. Don't want to say the brand, but you know, it works fine. It's updated regularly. Run a scan every day.
And you keep everything. You keep the Windows update going and everything. Yeah.
Everything is totally updated.
Now,
I haven't run Malwarebytes yet, and I haven't run any of those.
So a couple of things to try, and I don't know if they'll help. Another one, you could create a new Firefox profile. But I would first start by resetting Firefox. If that doesn't work, then create a new profile, see if it happens in the new profile. And if that does not fix it, then I would uninstall Firefox and reinstall it. And if that doesn't fix it... It's odd that it doesn't happen in any other browser, but, you know, it's possible that Firefox got infected and nothing else did. And by the way, these are not necessarily malware. These browser hijacking things are, you know, they are malware, absolutely, but they're kind of so minor that they may not be seen as malware by your antivirus.
Yeah, I did find a link in the Mozilla Zine. Boy, that's hard to pronounce.
I know, Mozilla Zine, but it's a great resource. It's a forum for all the Mozilla users, yeah, and magazines.
Started on December 6th, and there are a number of other users that are having the same issue.
Oh, interesting. All right. Then there may be a bug. You know, you're using software that updates fairly frequently. For a while, Mozilla was not doing. Everybody's doing it now. All the browsers automatically update.
I checked that too, and I'm on version 17.01, and I've been on that version since about Monday. It hasn't updated since then. There haven't been any updates in my add-ons or anything. I've been really trying to research this out before calling you because it's really a strange problem.
Yeah, and it's not universal.
No, not totally. Although I don't know if you know, any of you guys have tried that, doing a secondary search with Firefox on Google.
Mike, just uninstall it and reinstall it. See what happens. It could just be, things get screwed up. Computers, if they worked fine, then we wouldn't need them. No, that doesn't make sense. Computers.
No, they can't work fine. Then you'd be out of a radio show.
If they worked fine, you wouldn't need me. That's it. Thank you, Mike. I'll keep my eye peeled. Keep listening, and we'll see if we can come up with another possible.
Thanks so much, Leo.
Yeah, I really appreciate your call. Thank you. Sorry, I couldn't be more help. Pete, Riverside, California. Pete, you're on the air. Leo Laporte, the tech guy.
Yeah, Leo. I was wondering, I'm so frustrated with phone technology now. Do you ever see a time when the cell companies will release their hold on voice and let us just buy data?
It's coming. In fact, it might be coming sooner than you think. Dish has announced they're going to do that. Dish Network. Well, you don't have to have Dish Network to do it. No, I know. Dish Network's starting a cellular company to do this. So here's the thing. LTE, which you've heard of because everybody's, trumpeting it as a data system, is actually more than a data system. It's data and voice. But nobody's using it that way yet. Verizon's not. AT&T's not. But ultimately, all the companies plan to roll out LTE and get rid of their voice technology. So it's exactly as you say. But if you were to be a new mobile phone company, that's probably how you'd start. And that's what Dish is talking about.
So there's no regulatory issues that would prevent them from doing that then?
Oh, there's huge. Are you kidding? You got to be nuts to try something like this. But Charlie Ergen is nuts. The owner of Dish. And he's an amazing fellow with a larger than life ego. He's a little grandiose, and in fact, one of the rumors is that Google might partner with them in this. Now, I don't think that's going to happen because they need an internet service provider at back end to it. But that's one of the rumors. So, when is this happening? Certainly not till next year. Sprint has made noises about partnering with them. There's all sorts of... This is a very rapidly changing universe because everybody sees this as ripe for reinvention, right? Because it's just not working.
So do you think that they'll unbundle phones at the same time? I'm talking about carriers like Verizon and those kind of people.
Well, T-Mobile is unbundling phones right now. That was their big announcement this week, is that they are going to, they currently have a $79 all-you-can-eat plan. They're going to lower the cost of that. They're going to unbundle the phones. You bring your own because they're a GSM network, so that's easy. Or you can buy a phone from them at full cost, put it on their network, no month-to-month, no contract, no early termination fee, and a lower data fee. The question is, will people understand this? I'm paying $600 for that phone? Yes, but you're going to save $1,000 over the life of the phone. I don't know. It's confusing to people. So while we want to see this reinvented, some people just say, I don't get it. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. I was talking in the break with some of the members of our studio audience about my daughter. She's 20, and we were texting last night, and I did something she found offensive in the text. I wanted to say to be you, and something like we just want you to be safe. So I wrote you, the letter U, the number 2, and the letter B. You to be, right? Like the kids do, right? Wrong. She said, Dad. Nobody under 27 does that. And certainly nobody of your socioeconomic status. Please use spell words out and use punctuation. And I said, huh? The funny thing is, I can remember when she was a kid telling me that nobody uses punctuation or spells words out. So things have come around. I think what's changed is that they, in the old days, we used to have those, numeric keypads. So that every letter was a horrible trial to type out. Now we have real keyboards. It's no big deal. You could dictate it. She says, I'm actually reading the text. Please never text me anything like you to be again. Not hip, Dad. People 26 and older all use lame texting slang. My generation always spells out texts. I've been pwned. Dr. Mom says, my daughter chides me when I use abbreviations, saying, you're too old to use those. Dr. Mom's in our chat room. In fact, you could be in our chat room, too. All you have to go to TechGuyLabs.com. TechGuyLabs.com. I love it. Lorenzo, Keyport, New Jersey. Hi, Lorenzo. Leo Laporte, the tech guy.
Well, she told you, didn't she, Leo?
She did. She did. Oh, man.
I knew I had to be the next call because it was silence in here, and then all of a sudden the dog barks, the baby cries, the phone rings.
Right. That means you're on the air. That means you're on the air.
So, I am a developer and a web designer and graphic designer, which means for my family, I am tech 101.
Oh, it's a good job, isn't it?
Yeah, it reminds me of the K bit where nobody appreciates anything.
Right.
My wife, it's her birthday and Christmas within 5 days of each other. So I have put her in an iPad, a Kindle Fire, a MacBook Pro, and
not all in the same day, I hope.
Well, they might as well be. I mean, she can find something that she doesn't like about it.
Yeah.
In each one.
Yeah.
Doesn't like about the iPad and the Kindle is she likes a keyboard.
Right.
So, where I'm at, Chromebook. At the price, it seems like a good price, and I just wonder what you've heard about it.
I think that, now you got to get the Samsung Chromebook, okay? Because there's another one. I think they make a less expensive one from Acer or Asus, somebody with an A, that's kind of cheesy. Okay. But the Samsung is very nice. Now, understand what you're getting with a Chromebook, and I think it might be perfect for your wife. It's not really, it's a computer. It's kind of like a netbook, It's not super fancy. It doesn't have a lot of storage. But if you're a Google user, it's great. Basically, it's using Google's Chrome OS, which is essentially a browser. Now, nowadays they've updated it. It looks like it's got menus. But really, you can only do stuff you can do in the browser. And so when you want to do word processing, you'll use a browser extension. Take notes, you'll use a browser extension. Now, the good news is Chrome has a lot of browser extensions. So one way to test this out is to actually just use Chrome on a computer. And you'll get an idea of what Chrome OS is like and what it can do. They have quite a broad variety of things. It's pretty flexible. It's a beautiful little computer. What was it? $250, right?
Yeah, and I've exhausted. I mean, you know, the person who doesn't use technology that often can always find the imperfections in what we appreciate as
right.
holding an iPad in your hand and you're basically on the internet right. on a highway.
Yeah, but she just wants to use it. She doesn't understand what an amazing thing. What hath God wrought? But the quality of the audio is so poor. So, I would look at the Samsung Chromebook. I think this is actually designed for people like that. Unfortunately, Google says we're sold out, we're out of inventory, please check back soon. So you might have a hard time finding this. It's a beautiful little device. You've seen the ads in which they show babies and dogs using it.
Yeah.
It really is designed, it's very light, very portable, 6.5 hours battery life, just 2.4 pounds. And if what you're doing is surfing the web, checking your email, maybe mm-hmm. you know, looking at Facebook, this is plenty.
Okay. Well,
I think it's going to be a little more challenging.
I did see that. I thought I found it on Amazon.
Grab it. Or, you might find it at a slight premium on eBay as well.
On eBay. Okay.
Yeah. Now, remember, this is Wi-Fi only. It's not 3G. So.
Correct. I think Verizon is. It's through Verizon 3G that they have.
Somebody is, but it won't be the same one. And this. I've tried a number of Chromebooks, and I've been fairly skeptical about it. But remember, I'm like you. I'm a geek. Now, right. I want to do more. I think for somebody who doesn't want to do a whole lot, this is a very good choice. But some of them are kind of netbooky. So
yeah, I'm going to go look at Best Buy and just to actually see it. But the reviews, and for the price point at $250, it's right. not the biggest loss considering the Kindle.
Well, that's exactly right. I mean, and that's another reason it's going to sell. But remember, netbooks were very popular. Our friend Jeff Jarvis, who is the host of our show about Google and a journalism professor at City University of New York, very well known film reviewer or TV reviewer in his day, has decided to, as an experiment, use only a Chromebook. And he's been very happy.
That's more than an experiment. That's daring.
It's daring. I know. I thought it was nuts. Now, I think the ones that you're going to see at Best Buy and on Amazon are the previous generation.
Okay.
So go to play.google.com. Go to the devices section. This is the one that Jeff's using. This is the most recent one. It's brand new. I think there'll be more of these, maybe even in time for Christmas. There are other Chromebooks, but I think that's the one you want.
The Samsung one,
yeah,
correct.
If you okay. can find it, yep. Good luck. I think you're actually on the right track. And I would have gone through, I would have done exactly that. I would have said, well, here's an iPad. No.
That didn't,
here's a Kindle. No. Here's a Galaxy Note 2. No.
No.
No. She wants a keyboard.
I'm going to give her AOL and Netscape, and then we'll...
She'll be happy. Then she'll be happy. Good luck, Lorenzo.
Thanks, Leo.
We've all been there. Yeah, I think the Chromebook is very interesting. You know, I actually had a debate with Sundar Pichai, who's the guy in charge of Chrome OS at Google, because I didn't understand why Google needed two operating systems. They have a very good one. It's called Android. It's rapidly becoming one of the best known operating systems in the world, primarily on cell phones, some tablets. And it's touch, and it's nice, and it's fast, and it's well-supported by apps. And I said, what do you need another OS for, especially one that's really just a browser in a box? And he made a case, well, education, business, where they don't want a lot of capabilities, people like your wife. And I think that there are some people who would be happy with that. I think it's doable if your needs are few. Everybody in the chat room is saying, Leo, you're leaving out the fabulous Surface RT from Microsoft, but the problem is the price. We're talking, if you want the keyboard, and she does, $600+. I don't think that's the right one for her. I don't know if it's the right one for anybody, to be honest. Apparently, the world agrees. They're just not selling these. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Our show today.
Brought to you by
my phone company. Have I showed you my phone? I got a great phone. This looks like a normal business phone, doesn't it? Two lines, you know, it's got all the buttons. directories, applications. It's a Polycom. HD voice, good quality. You know, it's a good phone. That is not connected to a switch anywhere. It's not going to the phone company. It's going to the internet. That is a Ring Central phone. Ring Central. When we built the studio, I realized I had to get a phone system. Look, you got to understand, I'm not a businessman. I don't know anything about this stuff. But I knew that I couldn't make my employees continue to use their cell phones for business. I mean, it was, you know, I could only get away with that for so long. So, and I was kind of racking my brain because I really didn't want to buy a phone system. I just thought, too complex, too expensive. Nobody's going to use it. They're still going to use their cell phones. And Russell Tammany, he's a contract IT guy. Doesn't work for us. He's just, you know, he comes in, I think, 10 hours a week, something like that. He said, well, I have installed Ring Central on a bunch of clients, and they are very happy with it. You might want to take a look at it. So we did. We bought. Here we are a year and a half in, and we love it. So it is the number one cloud-based phone system for business. You plug the phone into the wall, and it acts just like a real phone. It's actually better than a, you know, so-called real phone system, but without a PBX in the basement, without a switch, without dealing with a phone company. Faxes come into my email box or my cell phone. Voicemail messages, same thing. I have a Ring Central app on my phone that I can make calls with that come out from the business number. It's $20 per month per user. And right now you could try it free for 30 days, a risk-free trial that includes free phones. When you buy a desk phone, you'll get a second phone free up to 20 phones. All-inclusive pricing, a great deal on phones, 800-543-9980. That's a number just for my listeners. That's another nice thing about using a cloud-based phone system. You can pick numbers. You can have all sorts of clever things. You know, when my desk phone rings, so does my cell phone. 800-543-9980. Take a look at Ring Central. Go to ringcentral.com and use the promo code TWIT. If there's a power outage, it's a good question. We don't make phone calls. But we're sitting in the dark. If there's a power outage, we go to lunch. What do you do when there's a power outage? Do you sit at your desk in your office with the lights out, your computer dead, and make phone calls? There's no power in my office, but I'm going to call you anyway. No, I think your internet has to be up and your power has to be on. It's like Google Voice on steroids. It's like, you know, if you're running a business, you're going to run it on Google Voice. Well, for instance, the things you can't do with Google Voice, the phone tree. Call 800-605-TWIT. And go ahead. Why not? And you'll hear the phone tree. And I recorded them. It was very easy. You do it on the web interface. All sorts of sophisticated stuff going on there. Very cool. Can't do that. RingCentral.com. Offer code TWIT.
The bump of my big black man.
Kyle Benham, our musical director, once again with the apropos song, Chrome OS. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. My phone number is 888-827-5536. You know, it's easy to remember just 8888, ask Leo. So 88 keys on a piano, right? So just think of two pianos, and then I'm on one of them, and you just ask me, what are you doing on that piano? That's how I remember it. 8888, two pianos, ask Leo. What are you doing on that piano? Only you don't have to dial the what are you doing on that piano part. Or you can visit our website, techguylabs.com. The phone number's there. So is a link to our chat room. All sorts of fun people in there talking back at me. Yep, techguylabs.com. Kyle Benham, musical director, puts a playlist together at the end of each show and puts that on the website, techguylabs.com, or on his Google Plus. That's Kyle Space Benham. Kyle, I think you and I are the only people in the Team Tech Guy community at Google Plus.
Leading the way.
We're leading the way, he says. So we got to get some more people in there. If you are on Google Plus and you like Google Plus, the Team Tech Guy is kind of fun. It's one of the new Google Plus communities. You know, they've set it up so you can set up a community. It's kind of like the old Google Groups, really, only beta. And Team Tech Guy, oh, no, I take it back. We have 139 members now. So it's growing, you know, just as fast as Google Plus is. And I'm going to moderate a few of these comments, make these visible. If you want to join us, we'd love to see you, plus.google.com. I don't know if it has a special URL. I don't think it does. Just look for Team Tech Guy. There are lots of groups all of a sudden. I joined a group for coffee fanatics that Mark Prince, CoffeeGeek.com created called Espresso. And it's one of the sections that I really like is espresso photos. Just lots of pictures of coffee. If you can't drink a cup of coffee, you could just admire it from a distance. Mark is such a coffee geek. I should get Mark on the radio show, shouldn't I? We could do a coffee geek thing. I got a travel segment now. Actually, Johnny, I think, was a little under the weather. Let me check my email, see if he was feeling better, because Johnny was a little under the weather. He's traveling. He's in Panama. So, he will come back soon. Let me see. Yeah, he's not feeling well. So he says, I don't feel good. So, no problem, Johnny. No problem. Feel better. We'll have you on next week. He was going to give us part two of his talk on how to save money on airfares this holiday season using the internet. And one of the things he mentioned last week, which is great, which is follow the airlines on Twitter. They announce deals on Twitter all the time. Oh, yeah. TechGuyLabs.com, 8888-ASK-LEO. Tony in Buffalo, New York. Another browser problem. Hi, Tony.
Hi, Leo. How are you?
I'm well. How are you?
I'm good. Leo, I have a problem with Safari.
Mm.
When I open up Safari,
mm-hmm.
and it goes to the home page, I have a magic mouse. I can't scroll with a magic mouse while I'm on the home page. But as soon as I go to any other page or click on any one of the, the ads or anything that's on that homepage, it scrolls fine, but it won't scroll on the actual homepage itself.
That's strange.
Bizarre, I know. It
when you say homepage, what is your homepage?
It's a local, it's WBEN.com.
So it's a local radio station?
Radio station, yeah.
Huh. So the magic mouse doesn't have a scroll wheel. You stroke it.
Exactly.
Which is not so magical. In my opinion, I don't use the magic mouse. I don't like it. It's, like, too weird for me. It doesn't have buttons. You just kind of press it. And the idea of the magic mouse is it's a trackpad on the surface of the mouse. Have you tried a regular mouse?
No, I haven't since this came up. It used to work with the magic mouse fine. And
it's got to be a problem with the page. It's the only page that doesn't scroll, right?
Is the home page, yeah, what it opens with.
Yeah, the WBEN page. So it's not the home page, it's just WBEN. I know it's your home page, but it's not because it's your home page. I think it's their page.
Yeah, that's what I think. Well, that's what I was calling.
Can you go leave the page or click a link and then it scrolls? Oh, actually, somebody said, somebody in the chat room said, hey, I just tried it. It won't scroll for me either. It's something wrong with the website.
Oh, okay.
Let me try it. I'm going to go there right now. It's a Buffalo news station. And no, it won't scroll for me either. They've done something wrong.
If you click on a headline or one of the...
Yeah, you can pull the scroll bar down. But I'm doing the scroll. It's not the mouse. It's not your Mac. It's not you. It's them.
Okay.
We've discovered the problem right there. That's ridiculous. Okay. It is possible in JavaScript to disable scrolling. That's pretty funny. yeah. Isn't that? But that's the way it is, isn't it, Tony? We blame ourselves. Must be something I'm doing wrong. No, it's somebody, the webmaster at WBEN. It's probably the sports director. And he's moonlighting as the web guy. He's, I could do that. I could do that. Wait a minute. Hold on. I'll do a website for you. It'll be beautiful. And he doesn't know what he's doing, obviously.
Okay. Well, maybe I could bring it up with them.
Sometime. Yeah, I would call them. Hey. By the way, they don't run the Tech Guy show. They've got a show called Ask the Tax Lady on right now. I don't know. Which would you rather do? Would you rather be talking to me or asking the tax lady? Weekend radio. It's fun. Thanks, Tony. I think we've solved that one. I do. I think that that's their problem. Jacob in Glendora, California. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Hi, Jacob.
Hi, Leo. I have a quick question. I used to have an iPod Touch fourth generation,
mm-hmm.
and I know it's just kind of a spoil of the generation, I guess, but I am thinking it's kind of running really slow, and so I'm highly considering getting an iPad mini, and I've heard people just don't really like it, but I've heard a lot of good reviews.
No, I do like it. It's an iPod Touch Maxi is what it is. Don't think of it as a small iPad. Think of it as a big iPod Touch. The only negative is not a Retina display, but I have to say, I love the size. I took it on my vacation, and it was fantastic. I highly recommend it, Jacob. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Well, a good day to you, Leo Laporte here, the tech guy. It's time to talk computers, the internet, cell phones, home theater, digital photography, and all that jazz. 8888-ASK-LEO, that's the phone number, 888-827-5536, toll free from anywhere. Did you see Tim Cook's interview with Brian Williams on The Rock? Or whatever they call it, 30 Rock, whatever they call that show. I didn't see it, but I, you know, you don't, nowadays you don't have to watch anything. You just, you know, it's all synopsized in the news. And there were a couple of things Tim Cook said that was kind of interesting. First of all, a number of commentators found it kind of interesting that Tim Cook and Brian Williams could walk all the way across the floor of Grand Central Station and not be recognized. I don't know if that says more about Brian Williams or more about Tim Cook. I don't think Steve Jobs could have done that. That's for sure. But some interesting stuff. One of the things he talked about was television. He kind of confirmed the rumor that Apple was going to make a TV. Fascinating. He said, we you know, you go in a living room and you sit down at the TV and you feel like you're going back in time. It's so primitive. Really? Really? I don't feel that way. But apparently that's how he feels. So he implied that we, just as Steve Jobs did in the biography, that was done before his death, Steve said, you know, we think TV's terrible, but we've solved the problem. Now, he didn't exactly say that Apple was going to make a TV, but he kind of implied that they were. So I'll be very interested to see. It'll be probably next year at some point. He also mentioned that Apple was going to start producing some Macs in the United States. He said, we've been working on this for a long time. It'll happen in 2013. I think they're going to actually, Apple said, Apple's not going to make these. We're going to have a third party make them, but we're going to make them in the United States. I think that's interesting. I think it's good. I'd like to see some jobs come back here. He pointed out that the glass, for instance, for the iPhone is made in Kentucky. That's Gorilla Glass. He said, we're going to bring some production to the U.S. on the Mac. Probably what? The Mac Pro? Maybe the iMac? We've been working on this for a long time. We're literally investing over $100 million, which isn't much for Apple, but they've got $100 billion more in the bank. This doesn't mean Apple will do it ourselves, but we will be working with people and we'll be investing their money. My guess is that Foxconn, who's their current manufacturing partner in China, will open a plant in the U.S. They've already done that in Brazil, where Apple makes iPads in Foxconn, Brazil. So I think it's, you know, this is interesting stuff. I'm trying to see if there's anything else he said. You know, the Steve Jobs, so-called Steve Jobs multi-touch patent was overturned by the United States Patent and Trademark office. So Apple's lost that patent. You know, it never should have had it. But fortunately, it's been overturned. Interesting stuff. Tim's giving interviews to a lot of people. Business Week, NBC. I think the idea is to introduce him to the world. And he's been surprisingly outspoken. You know, there was a time when the CEO of a company did not do a lot of interviews, was busy running the company. Nowadays, the CEO is as much the front man as anything else. I think Steve Jobs is one of the people that really changed all that. Eric Schmidt, when he was at Google, did that. Now the new CEO at Google, Larry Page, very rarely goes out in public or gives interviews. In fact, I think he gave his first interview just a few weeks ago. 8888-ASK-LEO. Let's get back to the phones. Jay is in Whittier, California. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Hi, Jay.
Good morning, Leo. Thank you very much for taking my call.
My pleasure.
I purchased a Powerlight media, a multimedia projector, and for some reason I can't get a DVD when I put it into my laptop, which is a Presario 2500. It will not play or will not project on my projector. I can see the desktop and everything. Then there's when I have the little square in there for the
two words. Copy protection.
Copy protection?
Yeah. So nowadays, to play back a Blu-ray, you have to have hardware that is HDCP compliant from end to end. That means the player. That means the cable. That means the screen. And if all three are not compatible with HDCP, high-definition content protection, then it will... Well, what it's supposed to do is degrade and play at a very low quality, but my experience has been with exactly the similar situation, it just doesn't play at all.
Okay, because I get this, it says the error message, create overlay failed. Please lower your screen resolution.
Oh, okay. Okay.
And try again. And I've lowered it, and it still doesn't correct it.
Well, it may not be copy protection. If now that Powerlight, is it designed to play back? Does it have an HDMI cable? Is it designed to play back movies?
Well, it has the it has also a USB connection that you can plug into your computer.
Nothing's gonna that's not gonna work for a Blu-ray. So so a couple of things could be going on. Epson makes also a cinema light that are designed for playing back HDMI movies. It's HDCP compliant. The power light is really for PowerPoint projections, and so it may not. You're playing back a Blu-ray, right?
No.
Oh, a regular DVD.
This is standard DVD.
I apologize. So you don't have to worry about HDCP with DVDs. In fact, the copy protection on DVD is pretty primitive. I apologize. That is not it. But that is something to be aware of. If you're playing back Blu-rays, you're going to have trouble on many of these devices because of the copy protection. In this case, it does sound, the error message you're getting sounds like, what I would turn off is look in your display preferences and turn off acceleration, video acceleration.
Okay.
That's one thing to try. Older computers use something called video overlay to display video, bypassing the video card. It would blast it onto the screen, but what's going to cause a problem with the secondary screen, right? So
Okay. You
have to make sure, are you mirroring or are you using an extended desktop?
An extended desktop.
Okay, so you might try mirroring and make the projector be the number one display, not the number two display, the primary display.
Okay.
So you're going to have to play with those display settings on your computer. Turn off hardware acceleration. That will disable playthrough. That's the overlay thing. And then make sure the projector is the primary display and you're using mirroring. All of that will be in the display control panel. And I apologize. I misunderstood. I thought you were running a Blu-ray. I've had lots of trouble with Blu-ray playing Blu-rays off of laptops for that reason. And thanks to the chat room, who all knew what was going on long before I did. Rick in Appleton, Wisconsin. Leo Laporte, the tech guy.
Hello, Leo.
PBS in our chat room says, I've worked in the events industry doing AV for hundreds of shows, and I've seen that exact problem a billion times. That will do it. Make sure that the projector is the primary display. It fixes it every time, says PBS. Go ahead, Rick.
Leo, am I on the air?
Yes, sir. Hello. Well, now you're not. We're going to take a break and come back. We'll try again, Rick. Hang on the line. He's on the infamous line 3, Kyle. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Wow, this is beautiful, but I don't know what the connection is, but I'm sure I'll find out. Kyle Benham, our musical director, attempts in every segment to play a song that is apropos. Is this a Christmas song?
The Glee cast.
This is the cast of Glee.
Papa, can you hear me now?
Papa, can you hear me now? All right, thank you very much. You can get Kyle's playlist after the fact on his G Plus account, Kyle Benham, or on our website. Now, Rick, I'm going to try again. This line 3, we got to get the Ghostbusters out because there's something. It's always been something a little strange with it. Let me try again. Can you hear me now, Rick?
Do we have a connection?
Yeah, can you hear me?
I can hear you, Leo.
Okay. If I fade out, let me know.
Okay. I have a connection problem as well.
Ah.
I'm working on a Windows XP, and I had a malware program that I had installed to get rid of some bugs. And after I installed it, I was surfing through a couple of different malware programs, and I found out that the program that I installed just recently was suspect. And I figured, well, there's so many of them out there, to yank it out. So I attempted to, I did uninstall it.
Yeah.
And in the process, I lost my drivers.
Yeah. I'll tell you what happened. So here's what's going on. You really got to start over. You got to reformat the drive and then reinstall Windows. And I'll tell you why. What happens with modern viruses and malware is they attach themselves to critical system files.
Oh, yeah.
So when you remove them, often, and the reason they do that is so you can't remove them, right? So if you remove them, then it'll break things. Sometimes it breaks internet connectivity. Sometimes it keeps the computer from booting and spooning. And in this case, they attach themselves to drivers and things aren't working. So that's one reason why the idea of removing a virus from a system and then continuing to use it is a bad idea. The real reason is worse than that, which is that it gives you a sense of false confidence. You run malware bytes or whatever, some anti-malware package. First of all, you got to make sure it's legit. Because if I'm a malware author, you know what I would do? I would create a piece of malware. I would name it Malware Bytes 2.0 or something and tell the world it was an anti-malware product. Get them all to run it. See, what they're all trying to do is get you to run a program on your system that installs their software. And so they have to do some what we call social engineering. They have to trick you into doing it. So that anti-malware that you thought you were running, maybe it is malware. Sounds like it might have been. And even if you got the right malware bytes and you removed everything it could find and everything seems normal, there's no guarantee that, in fact, you've removed everything. The best malware, you don't even know you've got it. And a lot of malware, viruses, trojans, that kind of thing, as soon as it installs in the system, opens the door to other malware. It turns off your antiviruses. It turns off system restore, disables your ability even to research viruses by blocking you from going to antivirus sites, and in many cases, disables your firewall. Getting one virus on your system is like saying, come on in, guys, the water's fine. So I always assume if I find any malware on a system that that system has more than that. And it almost always I'm right. There's usually more than one. And you never know if you've got them all. Now, you might say, well, it's running fine. What do I care? Well, you might care if that malware that's running on your system that you can't see is harvesting passwords and credit card numbers and sending them back to the bad guy. You might care. You might care if it's using your computer to forward spam or attack other systems. You might care, and you might never know. So, Rick, as soon as you're getting, you know, obviously you have malware. You had malware. You tried to remove it. It's messed up the system. There is no repair possible. I'm sorry. There is repair possible, but it's not recommended because it won't guarantee a good system. The one and only thing you can do and should do at this point is format, you know, make sure you get your data off of there, back up your data. That's okay to do, by the way. I'll explain what to do with that in a second. So get an external drive, run down to the computer store, get an external drive, plug it in, copy your only your files, the files you created, copy those over, pictures, documents. That's why I recommend Carbonite, because, you know, you don't have to think about that. You've already done it. But let's make sure you got a copy. Even if you had Carbonite, I'd still do this just to make sure you have a copy of all the stuff you can't afford to lose. Then nuke it. Format the drive, erase it, repartition it. Get a known good copy of Windows. This is important. What you'd like is a Windows disk that has the Microsoft holographic image on it. You want a known good copy of Windows. And restore Windows. You got it running. It's installed. Then the very first thing you do is you go and you run Windows Update until there are no more critical updates. That may take a while. It may take several reboots. But you got to keep going until you have that system fully patched. Now and only now is it safe to go on the internet. Anywhere but Windows Update. Now you can, I would put your data back on. It might be a good idea to get a good antivirus. We recommend Nod 32, but there's others. Get a good antivirus and scan your data just to make sure that the data didn't copy with it a bug. Sometimes they try to hitchhike on data. But in general, a virus to attack your system has to run a program. So data is usually safe. And then you can install apps. I wouldn't reinstall all your apps. I would install your apps from known good sources. I'd be very careful about what you do on the internet from now on. And I absolutely would never, ever, ever download a file or a program from a source you're not absolutely sure about. And that might even include a website that says, oh, I see you have a virus. Install our special anti-malware package. Because, again, if I'm a bad guy, that's the best way I can think of to get on everybody's computer. So I have to do this once per show. I'm sorry it happened to you, Rick, but there is no shortcut. And in a way, it's great that those drivers didn't work because it's forcing you to do what you should do anyway, which is format and reinstall. Ray in Ashland, Kentucky. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Hi, Ray. Hi, Ray.
Can you hear me?
Yeah. Can you hear me?
Yes, I can hear you.
Okay, let me know if I fade out or drop out. We're having trouble with the phone system again.
Yeah, it was kind of breaky when I was on hold. Well, this is my question real quick. I have a Facebook page for my business, and I have a QR code that you're supposed to scan it, and it will get you forwarded to the Facebook page.
Okay.
Well, it was working fine because I tested it, and recently when you scan it, instead of forwarding you to the Facebook page, it tells you have to be logged in order to view the page, but I haven't changed any security settings or privacy settings at all. I've left everything the same as when I tested it, and so I really don't know why it's doing that. And
you probably tested it on a computer that was currently logged into Facebook.
No, I've checked it on an app, the scan app that's supposed to scan QR codes is where I checked it, and it was working fine. So I have two different.
It's saying you have to log into Facebook to see your page?
Yes, but when you...
All right, hold on a second. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Our show today brought to you by ShareFile.com. When I share files in business, you know, I'm not going to be using mega upload. You want to use something a little professional, right? Something that reflects well on your business. And it may be, in fact, that if in many businesses, there are regulations, privacy and security regulations you have to follow. If you're in the real estate business, you don't want to just kind of give people, here, let me just email that lease to you with your social security number in it. No, don't do that. Email's not secure, and if you're sending big files, you know, there's always the problem with bounce backs. You can overflow somebody's mailbox, then you've made a friend. Let me tell you about ShareFile. ShareFile's from Citrix, so it's designed, you know, with a number of goals in mind. One, privacy, security. Two, professional. It's got to look good. It's got to work well. It's got to work well with your clients and colleagues, and it can't make them jump through hoops. They shouldn't have to join anything, log in, create an account, and any of that stuff. They should just get a link and download it, right? Got to be easy for you to use. Can't have any file size limits. And it has to be compliant with regulations in a variety of industries. HIPAA compliant if you're in the medical industry, things like that. Go to ShareFile.com. You'll see. What is making that noise? You will see an amazing thing. You will see a drop-down list of all the industries. Just click that Start Your Free Trial here. Of all the industries that ShareFile supports. Everything from accounting to advertising, audio, biotech, music, yes, of course, medicine, legal profession, transportation, venture capital. When you pick that industry, it's going to give you a system that's compliant with all regulations in that industry. I got a better idea. Use our special code for a 30-day full trial. See up here at the top, it says radio listeners. Click here. Click that. And use Tech Guy as the offer code. Then select the industry. I'll show you what my ShareFile site looks like. It's really, really awesome. Where is it here? I got too many tabs open. That's one of them. There it is. So this is my ShareFile site. Notice, by the way, our Twit logo. Yes, it's got your own branding. Now, this is what I see. And by the way, you can also see this because you could see all your ShareFiles on your smartphone or your computer. So it's cloud storage, right? But let's say I need to send KFI, I can click this, an advertisement. Here's my recording. I want to send them this special ShareFile ad. I check the box. You could do this in Outlook with a plugin, but I'm just doing it on the website. Press send. Now, you have two choices. I can create an email using ShareFile. I like to do this. Give me a link I can copy. And let me show you the settings on this, too. They're kind of cool. Email me when the item's been downloaded. Require the recipients to enter name and email before downloading. Download access expires anywhere from never to after one day, a year, how many times they can download it. You know, so I could say you can use this for a week. You can download it once only. And you got to enter your email. Then I click send files. Now I'm going to get a link. I'll copy this to the clipboard. This is a unique link that I can email people. Let me show you what they get when they type in the link, because this is the best part. They don't have to log in anything. They just click the link in the email. And they'll get a custom branded page with the download button. They don't have to join anything. For your convenience, a zip file is created when you download multiple files. This couldn't be easier. And it's very professional. If you're going to share files, you've got to use ShareFile. Citrix knows what they're doing. I want you to try it free for 30 days. ShareFile.com. Click that green button at the top that says radio podcast listeners and then use the offer code TechGuy. So Ray has a good, Ray's got a business. And do you put the QR code in the window or in your phone book or, phone ads, Yellow Page ad, things like that, right? And then the idea is that people take their phone, they take a picture of it, and it sends them right to your page. Here's the problem, Ray. You're sending it to a Facebook page. That's what happened. Facebook changed it. The people have to log in now to see your page.
But the problem is that when you log in, instead of showing my page, it shows pages you may like, and it gives you a bunch of suggestions.
Some of which probably are competitors. So let me tell you, that's why you don't want to use Facebook for what you're doing.
Okay.
Now, the user can click close, and they'll see the page, but you don't want to have to say, your whole point of this is to be automatic.
Exactly. this is the other thing that I noticed, because I was thinking of the QR code problem. When you go onto Google and you say the name of my business and you say on Facebook, obviously it gives you the search of my business page on Facebook. When you click on that also on a Google search, it forwards you to the same page.
Yeah, that's not Google. That's not the QR code. That's Facebook doing that. That's why you don't want to. You should have look, in business, you should have a Facebook page. You should have a Twitter account. You should have whatever social media, Google+. But you should not be sending people there when they click the QR code. You should be sending them to your web page so that they don't have to go through that rigmarole. So you need to set it. So the answer to this, Ray, is there's nothing you could do about it. Facebook gets to decide that. This is the I understand that everybody uses Facebook and putting your business on Facebook is a good thing. I'm not trying to discourage you from doing that. But you have no control. Facebook can decide on their own at any time just to kill the page. Facebook could decide if they wanted to redirect you to a competitor. They don't have any obligation to do what you think they're going to do. And in this case, they decided to make people log in because they want you to basically create new Facebook members. So don't do Facebook for your QR code. That's the mistake. You cannot change it. There's nothing you can do. There's no setting. It's Facebook. That's how it works. So create a website of your own. You should have one of your own anyway. Any business owner who does not have their own web page is making a huge mistake because that you control. You don't control Facebook. You don't control Twitter. You don't control Google+. Create a real page. It's easy to do. Go to Squarespace. You could even use Google if you want. Go to Blogspot. Go to WordPress.com. It doesn't have to be anything fancy. It can even be free. But what you want to do is to go to a page that you control so that the user experience when they get to that page is in your hands, not Facebook's. That's all. That's all. You cannot control how Facebook is going to treat that incoming viewer. And in this case, they changed how it happens. I teach this stuff all the time. I tell people about, you know, in business using social media, it's very important, but it starts with your page. You got to have your own page. And it's not expensive. It's not complicated. It doesn't have to be super fancy. And by the way, if you're a business that doesn't have a web page, I don't know about other people, but that's how I do my research. Before I decided what Pilates teacher to use, I looked her up on Facebook. Before I decided what hairdressing salon to go to, I looked it up, not on Facebook, on the web. I looked for a web page. I wanted to find out more about them. Frankly, if this is important to you, probably a good idea to not use a free site, but to go somewhere like Squarespace where you control it. But if you want a free site, there are three great places. There's Blogger, there's Tumblr, and there's WordPress.com. Those are all free. They're all good. I think you frankly should have your own domain name. You know, RaiseGreatStore.com, Raise Hardware, whatever your business is, you need your domain name.com. And you need a website that you control, that you own, that you keep going. And then still have a Facebook page and Twitter page and all that stuff. Lefty in Anaheim, California. Leo Laporte. I'm sorry, Letty, not Lefty.
Hi, how are you doing?
I'm sorry, Letty. I'm great. How are you?
Oh, good. Happy Hanukkah. Happy Christmas. Merry Kwanzaa.
Merry Kwanzaa. Festivus for the rest of us. All of that. Yes.
Yeah. So, I have a question, please. I knew I should never have done it, and I did it anyway. I'm trying to get unbundled from Time Warner. Because one, it has your phone, your TV, and your internet together. Well, with our phone, I think we had a total of 260 minutes all year to use it.
Right.
Are you there?
Yep.
Yeah.
Yep.
And so what I'm trying to find out, is there a way of getting the internet without having to have, because I used to have DSL.
You don't have to bundle your phone service or even your TV service. You can have just the internet from Time Warner. You can have just the phone from your phone company.
I know, but what I'm trying to find out is, can you have the internet without having a phone service?
Yes.
Or do you have to go through cable? Or you have to have...
So there's two very common ways to get the internet. One is through your cable, and one is through your phone line. That's called DSL.
Right.
DSL
right.
Without a phone is possible, but they don't like it too much. That's called... phone company doesn't like it. It's called dry wire, dry DSL, or dry loop DSL. But you can ask for it, and most phone companies will provide it. They don't explain that. Who are you going to get your phone service from?
Well, it would probably be... I think AT&T, because I think AT&T has swallowed up everything in our area.
Well, do you want to drop Time Warner entirely, or do you just, what do you want to get from, you want to get anything from Time Warner?
Possibly the TV cable.
Cable. Do you want to get anything from AT&T?
No, I don't like AT&T.
So who are you going to get your phone service from?
Well, I was thinking of either going with staying. We have a Vantage line, or going with Phone Jack.
Okay.
Or Magic.
So you want to have internet and use VoIP, a voice over the internet solution, for your phone. Now, I should tell you the negatives on that. One is if the power goes out or the internet goes out, you've got no phone service. And it's a little sketchy with 911. You should check with the provider. Both Vonage and Magic Jack do support an E911, but it's not quite as good as a landline 911. You have to you often end up at with a regional 911 service who then forward you to the local service. So 911, for an emergency phone, the best thing is an unpowered phone plugged into an AT&T jack. Because even if the power goes out, that works.
Yes, but I would normally use, I'd probably just go ahead and use my cell phone.
Cell phone, right. I don't have phone service. I use a cell phone.
So, yeah, well, that's what we're looking at doing is using, if we have to have a phone at home, we would use, like I said, the Low Jack or the Vantage. Otherwise, we'd be using our cell phone.
Right. That's what I do. And so continue with Time Warner for cable TV. You can get Time Warner can just do cable and internet if you've been happy with their internet. If you don't like their internet or you consider it too pricey, you can call AT&T and try to get dry loop DSL where they usually will give it to you. You might have to beg, but that's possible. It's just remember the words dry loop. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Hanukkah.
Hanukkah is
festival of lights. Happy Hanukkah, everybody. Leo Laporte. 12 crazy nights. 8 crazy nights. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. He's on the line right now. By the way, the best thing Adam Sandler ever did was that song. We're on the line. You nothing to say about that, Dick. Are you an Adam Sandler fan?
No, I'm not a big Adam Sandler fan. I say the
come on,
only
the Water Boy. Come on.
Oh.
Classic. Dick DiBartolo's here. He's Mad Magazine's maddest writer, specializes in satirizing the world through his wicked pen. But he also, that's why you have an Inky Award.
Yeah.
What is it?
No, that's pretty good.
An Inkster, Ink Blot, something like that.
Close. Ink Pot.
Ink Pot Award.
Ink Pot.
He is also...
Steve and I.
Yeah, you and Steve Spielberg?
Spielberg, yeah.
No. He's also a gadget hound, and he joins us every week to talk about gadgets.
And, I try to find the offbeat stuff.
Yes.
So my guess is you do not own the flask... tie. Okay.
Well, wait a minute. That's quite mainstream. Doesn't everybody wear as a tie drink?
Well, the thing is that they're two college guys, Tom and Sean, and about a year ago, they sent me the pillow tie. And the object here was it's a good looking tie, actually, but it has a plastic bladder in it that in long, endless, boring meetings, you can just take out the little tab, blow up your tie, lay your head on the tie. And yeah, exactly like that. Exactly
just
like that.
Fall asleep.
Yeah. So they figured, well, wait a minute. What else can we put in a tie?
I ask that question all the time. What else can I put in a tie?
So they decided, wait a minute, we could put a different kind of bladder in the tie, and we could make it flask tie.
Are you sure they put a different kind of bladder in?
It is, because I happen to have both kinds of ties. Yeah, I don't wear a tie, but I can drink and sleep with the best of them. So it holds 6 ounces of liquid. You unscrew the bladder. You bring it wherever you want and pour your whatever you're going to pour into it. You know, actually, this is not a bad thing if you're a person that has to take medication at a certain time and you're at work and you don't want to leave the meeting. You can just pop your pills, suck your tie, and take your medicine.
Oh, boy.
Yep.
Yeah. And it just started on sale.
I can buy it?
$25, $24.95 at flasktie.com. And the ties are good looking, and I think as opposed to using them, it's a great gift and a great fun thing to talk about at the water cooler. You know, hey.
Who needs a water cooler? I've got a flask tie.
Yeah.
Nobody needs to know why you started wearing a tie. That's the slogan.
Yes, exactly.
Hi.
I'm a two-tie-a-day man now.
It says, don't be the guy with a cup of water. Drink from your tie. By the way, they're on Twitter, at Flask Tie.
Flask Tie.
Wow. Don't be shy.
Fun.
Follow the tie.
Like I said, it's two young guys, and I hope they're making a living at it, but it's fun.
You get $5 off your total Flask Tie purchase if you use the offer code FLASK5OFF, according to their Twitter feed.
Oh, okay, great.
Which means it's probably not super super exclusive.
No.
Oh, look, there's a link to the Gizwiz on their Flask Tie feed.
Oh, great. Yeah. They must have just done that. Excellent. Excellent.
Dick's website, I'll give you a link too, is gizwiz.biz, gizwiz.biz. That's all you have to remember if you want to.
Yeah, and the cover of the February Mad is just up now.
Oh, where would I find
it? Just click on what the heck is it game, and that's what you're playing for.
So you have to decide what this close-up photo of a gadget or gizmo, what that gizmo is, and if you figure that out, you can win an autographed copy of Mad. Actually, you don't even have to get it right. There's more Mad magazines for the wrong answer than there are for the right. And you're playing for the Lance E. Newman cover.
Yeah, it's this is always a big seller. It's the 20 dumbest people, events, and things of 2012.
Guaranteed to offend everyone.
Yes, and I wrote the Apple Maps apology letter.
Oh, I got to read that.
Yeah.
Oh, I got to read that. Now, that won't be out probably till next month.
It'll be out in about a week. Actually, yesterday, CNET actually posted my letter on their website.
Did they really? Oh, that's great, Dick. Oh, yeah. That's hysterical. So. The 20 dumbest people, events, and things. They misspelled dumb, D-U-M-B.
Yeah, I know. Isn't that ridiculous?
Some people. They're so dumb.
No.
They're so dumb.
I have total apathy for them. However you...
Dick DeBartolo joins us every week. You can find out more at gizwiz.biz. He also, if you stick around on the Twit Network, he'll be doing his Giz Fizz right after the radio show, and every Tuesday at 2 p.m. East, 2 p.m. Pacific, 5 p.m. Eastern on twit.tv. We do our gadget show. And, man, the stuff's been arriving from SkyMall.
I can't wait for that SkyMall crapola.
We do a little bit where I go through the SkyMall catalog and I buy something. And most of this stuff is just horrible. But I have high hopes for this one, the double-barreled marshmallow shooter.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. How's Lisa going with the signing them up to do some ads?
SkyMall?
Yeah.
You're not going so well.
No, okay. Okay.
They said it would be okay if you didn't use the word crapola.
Oh, okay. Okay.
I don't know why not.
Yeah, well, garbageola has
that.
No ring to it.
It's hard. It doesn't roll off the tongue.
Not
so
at
to speak.
All.
All right, Dickie D, we'll see you a little later. Thank you. Miriam in Los Angeles, you're next. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Hi, Miriam.
Hi. So we have a problem that every guru that we've had out cannot solve.
Oh, no.
And
you're calling me? Oh, dear.
We have a split screen on in our Hotmail, and it seems to be only in our Hotmail, and it's in both the inbox and in the preview box.
And when you say split screen, you're meaning it's split down the middle.
Right.
And can you read your email? I mean, is it intentional, or is it...
After about 4 seconds, 5 seconds, sometimes it resolves itself, and the two, the left and the right halves come together, and other times, not.
That is definitely not right.
I know. We talked to Dell. They've taken control of our computer. They've gone through it. We put in a new video card.
What version? Are you using Internet Explorer? Is that the browser you're using?
Using Hotmail.
Yeah. I'm looking and I'm out of time. I don't see an obvious answer, Miriam. Let me work on it. We'll put it in the show notes. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Well, that's it for the Tech Guy show for today. I'm Leo Laporte. Thank you so much for joining us. Don't forget, the Tech Guy is just the tip of the iceberg. We do nearly 30 shows now on the Twit Netcast Network, and you'll find them all at twit.tv. We talk about Windows on Windows Weekly, Macintosh on Mac Break Weekly, iPad on iPad Today. You get your daily dose of tech news from Tech News Today and our weekly roundtable show, This Week in Tech. It's all at twit.tv. And I'll be back next time with another great Tech Guy podcast. Thanks for joining me. See you next time.